Good afternoon, everybody. The sound is okay. Oh, there it is. Nice to see so many of you here. It's very rare that we get a chance to sit together in person as a community these days. So it's sweet. And we have new chaussee. See that? Pretty good, right? So far, so good. And welcome to the 2026 Everyday Zen Spring Practice Period. I believe it's our 21st annual practice period. Went by fast, that 21 years. And there are 148 of you who filled out the simple information sheet and that makes you officially a part of the practice period. So that's a good group. So as I do every year, I'm going to explain again, because probably some of you forgot or never knew the Zen tradition of Ango, or practice period, which they say began during the Buddha's day, when, you know, typically everybody roamed around in small bands, but during the rainy season they couldn't travel, so they got together all in one space, in one spot, for the rains retreat. And that that tradition was carried over to China and Japan, and it changed over the years. And by the time of Dogen, who founded our Soto school in Japan in the early 13th century, the practice period had become an annual 90-day summer retreat that was constituted and marked by a certain number of rituals and observances, kind of in the spirit of the ones that we did this morning, this afternoon, to open the practice period, but of course, very, very different. And one of the features of a practice period is that there is a head student, a first seat. Shuso, I think, means first seat. And that is a watershed moment in the life of a practitioner to serve as Shuso. It's a great honor and a privilege and a rite of passage for a Zen priest or a senior lay practitioner. And it's sort of like I was saying to Tracy, you know, the stars line up, you know, and it's you, and who knows why. It's rare, you know, that this should happen. So we are happy that Tracy, we talked her into it. And she said yes, and we have an extraordinary shuso this year. As you heard, her Dharma name is Ryugen Myoe, Dragon Eye, Inconceivable Shadow Image. Tracy is an environmentalist. She's an amazing artist with many, many angles in media. She is a very deep thinker. That's good and that's bad, as we all know. And she's been practicing Zen a long time with Everyday Zen. And many of you will remember that she was recently our Ko-ino and was always making announcements in the Zendo and organizing everything. She also has been a volunteer at the Zen Hospice Project. Maybe that's how come we're lucky to have Frank here this time. And she offered compassionate care to people at the end of their lives. So she brings a lot to us, and we look forward to her leadership, her intelligence, her compassion, her humor, her deep listening. She looks good in the seat, right? Yeah. And as I think we all know, the shuso will give several talks during the practice period before and during session. She'll have tea with the participants. She serves an example, the guiding spirit of the practice period, and we end the practice period with a Shuso Hosen Shiki, a ceremony in which everybody in the practice period gets to express their understanding, and she will respond to everybody. The tradition of practice period in America dates from about 1967 or so, when we held the first practice period at Tassajara, which is in the mountains, in the Los Padres Mountains, and we held it in the old Zendo that burned down in 1978. So we built a new one, and probably most of you know already that the new one burned down a couple days ago in the middle of the night. So now we're on our third Zendo, because we're going to build it right away, and everybody should write a check immediately to help them build it. We depend on Tassajara and the monastery there and the Zendo there. So that's when practice period began down there. It was in the summer originally, but then it became a fall and a winter spring practice period, two practice periods a year. During the practice periods down there, the rule is that no one leaves the monastery and no one comes, so there's no visitors, theoretically. Sometimes there's exceptions, but that's the idea. 90 days of very intense practice, most of the day in silence, in the faraway mountains. Not so different, maybe, from the way that our Zen and Chan ancestors practiced in ancient times. And Kathy and I were lucky to have lived at Tassajara for about 5 years in the 1970s. We were actually there in the Zendo the first time it burned down. We all got out in time, thank goodness. And also this time, no one was hurt. It's a great blessing. And we attended maybe 8 or 9 practice periods. And then when I served as co-abbot of the Zen Center, I was able to return down there to lead a number of practice periods. And then decades later, some of you were there. We had another one in 2019. We went down and did a 90-day practice period in the winter spring of that year. During the late 1980s, I think it was, the Zen Center began experimenting with shorter residential practice periods at Green Gulch, and they even experimented with non-residential practice periods at the City Center. And in 2027, next year, the beginning of the year, for those of you who might be interested in joining me, I'm going to lead a residential practice period again at Green Gulch in January, just a short one. I don't think they call it a practice period. It's some sort of other thing. An intensive, they might call it, in January of next year. So these are all innovations on the idea of the practice period. And such innovations, the idea of making a practice period shorter than 90 days, the idea of having a practice period that is non-residential, where everybody's not living together, these were actually pretty radical innovations. And there were a lot of people who felt that they were ill-advised. You know, I remember getting in conversations, very nice, sweet conversations with my old teacher who thought, no, you can't do that. It's not kosher at all. Real practice periods have to be cloistered. They have to be monastic. They have to last for 90 days. And then comes everyday Zen. We don't even have a temple, you know. We meet in a church, which is a pretty nice church, though. I'm not complaining. So we didn't even have a place where we could have a practice period exactly, even non-residentially. And then we have now people who are out in cyberspace here with us now, on the screens, who are very devoted to our Sangha and practicing. So how could we not include them? So we have this kind of strange practice period that not only is not cloistered, not 90 days, not residential, but even not even like physical in many cases. And I don't think we're the only ones who do this. I think Zen centers around the country in these times are doing versions of what we do. But the essential point, the meaning of practice period, the purpose of practice period, I would say is exactly the same for us as it was for those early monastics nearly 3,000 years ago. We want, like they did, to have a special period of time so that we can join with others to focus more attention on our practice than we're usually able to have a serious intention during this period of time to live a little more quietly, to sit a little bit more, maybe to sit a little bit more deeply with a bigger focus and a bigger effort than usual to extend our practice to our everyday lives, because that's really important. Formal practice for its own sake is not our point. So this is what we started today, 68 days of practice period. The Dharma statement that I have been using for these last years is a quotation from Dogen's fascicle called Shobo Genzo called Ango, which is the Japanese term for practice period. And as you could hear, in Dogen's mind, practice period is a big cosmic event. It's anchored, you know, in the people doing the practice period, but it's not limited to that. And as we've studied so many times over the years, and we know it so well, Dogen is telling us in so many ways over and over that ordinary time and space, the lives we think we're living, are more than they appear to be. He says in so many ways that every moment of time is all-inclusive, and every particle of space is a complete Buddha land. So according to Dogen, we're always doing practice period. And practice period is nothing other than the Buddhas and ancestors inhabiting our lives, which they do all the time, whether we think of it that way or not. To do what we call practice period in the ordinary everyday world is to feel this, to realize it, and to live it. As he says, when the practice period opens, you might think something is beginning, and when it closes, you might think something is ending, but you've been covered with beginning and ending the whole time, which means that the whole time you've been born every moment, and you have died every moment. We call this being born and dying moment after moment, we call that time, we call it life. But that's what it is, right? There is no other possible way that it could be. And a whole life goes by in every moment. I'm impressed, you know, with how decisive a moment is, you know. In the evening, there's a zendo at Tassajara, and the next morning, there is no zendo at Tassajara, and that's a decisive thing. Time, every moment of time, is just like that. And every moment goes by, a whole life goes by in a flash, and nothing happens, just as nothing happens in practice period. He says, There's not a blade of grass for 10,000 miles. So if you wanted the exorbitantly high fees that we charge for this practice period, if we charge any fees at all, if you wanted your money back, we would have to give it back to you because you're not getting anything out of this at all. He quotes in the fascicle an old priest named Shishin who says, "My practice life of 30 years amounts to one 90-day summer practice period, not a day more, not a day less." Dogen's essay on the practice period is actually a long, pretty long essay. And most of it, after the introductory stuff, which is what I was quoting from, tells you in detail, it's kind of interesting if you want to read it, how exactly the ritual observances and how they're done, how they were done, you know, in ancient Japan during Dogen's time, the medieval period. Suzuki Roshi's book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, has a chapter I really like called Repetition, in which he says, if you lose the spirit of repetition, your practice will be very hard. Repetition is the soul of religious practice. It's supposed to be boring. It's not interesting. When you do something over and over and over and over again, year after year after year, you kind of begin to feel space and time in the way that Dogen is speaking of it. For those of us who do practice period every year and have done it year after year after year, it just becomes a part of our lives. Our bodies, minds, and spirits reshape themselves around this endless space in time that we call practice period. And you know, sitting in Zazen is itself a ritual. It's not meditation. We sit down the same way every single day, year after year after year. I used to be impressed, like Dogen just quoted, when I heard about 30 years of practice. 30 years is just a metaphorical number, meaning a long time, a really long time. I used to think, you know, be impressed with that. Wow, 30 years. But now I know many people, many, many people, some of you here in the room, who've been practicing Zen for 40 or 50 years or more. So 30 years is not that long. It goes by pretty fast. Scary, right? Same is true with other rituals. Putting on the robe is a ritual. Bowing, chanting a sutra, offering incense, doing a ceremony. Every one of these rituals we try, even though we have such limited means and we don't even really know how to do them right, we try, you know, to invest these rituals with our whole heart because we know that they invoke this timeless time. Time is always timeless. But it's easy to miss that when you're busy rushing around, meeting appointments and doing this and doing that. That seems so important. You kind of can lose track of what's actually going on and has been going on the whole time. Zen practice has changed so much since Dogen's time. And although we practice period is marked by rituals like the ones we did today and others we will do, and we're trying to do, you know, rituals like Buddha's Parinirvana Day and other rituals, enlightenment ceremony and other things, we don't do any of the rituals the way Dogen describes them. That's because those rituals assume an ancient world. You have to have the right kind of room you know, in a right kind of monastery to actually do those rituals, and we don't have that. And also, you have to have the mind of a medieval person to be able to do those rituals in that way. And we no longer have that mind, and we no longer uphold those customs. And even if we decided that we would totally reconstruct exactly what Dogen did and those rituals, we could never pull it off. It would never be, it would totally be unable to be done. They can't even do it at Eheiji, the big headquarters monastery in Japan. And they still have Ango every year, but they can't do any of that stuff. It's too much. So it's no surprise that we can't do it either. And I think, it always really pissed me off, to be honest, that I don't think there is a single 90-day practice period in the United States or any other non-Japanese country, cloistered as it may be, serious as it may be, that is officially sanctioned and certified as a practice period by the Japanese Soto Zen Church. Because it does not have the right architecture, you know, does not have the right rituals which require the right architecture and so on. So we have never done, if you ask the Japanese, they will say, never mind our everyday Zen practice periods, forget about that. The 90-day angos at Tassajara never happened. They're not official. But does that mean that every moment is not eternal? No, every moment is still eternal. And so we make do in our own way. The way that Dogen made do in his way. And everything for us, everything depends on the seriousness of our effort and our intention. That's the only thing that makes practice period real. That and our essential Buddha nature. We don't need the Japanese to certify our practice periods. We certify them with those things. Our seriousness of purpose and intention and our confidence in Buddha nature. So now I'll tell you the story that I told before. It's a wonderful story, which Dogen tells in the fascicle Ango. He actually ends the fascicle with this story. Once upon a time, the Buddha was holding practice period. And on the last day during the Pravarana ceremony, and I told this story one year, and I said, the Pravarana ceremony? We never did the Pravarana ceremony during practice period. And so that year we started doing the Pravarana ceremony. We kind of looked it up and we reconstructed it out of some cockamamie, something. And now we do it every year. Because that's the way that, apparently, according to the story, that's the way that the practice periods ended in the Buddha's time, was with the Pravarana ceremony, in which all the monastics who had done the practice period come together and confess to one another all the shortcomings. Oh, I missed Zazen this day, and I broke this precept, and I did this, and I did that. And that's how you end it, by that confession ceremony. So they were having that ceremony in this practice period that the Buddha was leading, and Manjushri, Bodhisattva, who had not been in the practice period, all of a sudden showed up on the last day. And Kashyapa, who was the Eno, he was like the Neil of the Neil and the Mary of the Buddha was Ma Kashyapa, who was like the disciplinarian to make sure everybody did everything right. He was, of course, scandalized by, what, you show up on the last day, right? So he said, where have you been, Manjushri? Where have you been practicing the practice period? And Manjushri said, well, I've been practicing in three places, a demon's palace, a wealthy man's mansion, maybe Mar-a-Lago. I've been practicing. I spent the practice period at Mar-a-Lago. That was the second place. And the third place was a brothel. that's where I spent the practice period. And of course, Mahakashapa was totally scandalized and shocked by this admission and decided that the only thing to be done was to assemble all the monks to announce that Manjushri was hereby expelled not only from the practice period that he didn't show up for, but from the entire Buddhist order. And so he lifted the mallet to hit the han to assemble all the monks. And as soon as he picked up the hammer, he saw a vision in front of him of infinite Mahakashapas holding infinite hammers to strike infinite hans, to expel infinite Manjushris in infinite monasteries wherever he looked. There was another one. And of course, he was flummoxed by this. And wouldn't you know it, just at that moment, the Buddha appeared and said, "So, Mahakashapa, exactly which one of these Manjushris are you going to expel?" And Mahakashapa was dumbfounded. End of story. Dogen then quotes Yuan Wu, who commented on the story. "Mahakashapa made it to the ferry station, but Manjushri sitting rides the waves through limitless space." Dogen then goes on to say that the entire world is Manjushri and the entire world is Mahakashapa. So although Mahakashapa practice period in one place while Manjushri practiced it in three places, Manjushri was not a non-participant in the practice period. Because the only non-participants in the practice period would be non-Buddhas and non-Bodhisattvas. And since there are no non-Buddhas and non-Bodhisattvas to be found anywhere, everyone is always practicing practice period. This means that for the next 68 days, you are a bodhisattva and a Buddha. And everything you do, not only your formal practice commitments that you carry out, but everything you do will be sacred activity. Everything. Try not to forget. And the more you don't forget, and the more you devote yourself to bringing your heart in that way to every one of your activities, the better it's going to be for you and for everyone. One of the really fun parts of practice period for me is reading all of the enrollment forms. And life is so nice now, you know, like Laura sends me like a little link. And now I just click on a little link, and I used to have like giant binders like this that I would read through. Remember, I would come to the opening with these big binders. But now it's just a little link. But it's so easy now to read all of the enrollment forms. We used to call them applications, but applying for what, you know? And now we call them enrollment forms. Somebody figured out that was the word. So it's really fun to read all 148 of them. Because, and sometimes I guess I was thinking, it would be nice, since it's just a link and it's so easy, it would be nice if everybody could read all of them. But then I thought, no, because maybe you want to say things on them that you don't want other people to read, so that wouldn't work. But it's too bad we all can't read them, because they're so inspiring. They really are, and thank you all for filling them out. Because you finish it and you think, wow, where did we get such amazing people? Really, I feel so lucky to be practicing with all of you. You are not ordinary people. No. You are all extraordinary people. And some of you, I don't even need to read your enrollment form, because I've known you for so long, I know exactly already what you're going to say. Probably not, but maybe. So it is always great to practice with all of you. It's so great we know each other so long to practice together. And it's also great to get to know the new people. But even the people who are new to everyday Zen are not new to practice. Very few people among the 148 people have not done any practice, if anybody. All of you have practiced a lot over a lot of years. A number of you are priests and spiritual teachers. So this is really an awesome community of practitioners. And so I am not thinking that I have anything to teach you that you don't already know. It makes it just a joy to practice together, knowing that there's nothing anybody needs to hear from me that they don't have in their hearts already. Some of you are older people who have suffered many troubles. Lots of bad health things, losses of children, spouses, caretaking, spouses. You understand well what happens as life goes on and how important it is to practice. I don't have to tell you how essential it is for human beings to develop an authentic and firm sense of spiritual practice, and how important it is to have a community in that endeavor, and how essential it is to have support. I don't need to tell you that. You know that already. And we're also aware of living in a world with so many pressing and dramatic difficulties. I mean, it's stunning, especially those of us with a long life, to see all that's happened. And now this, you know, who could believe it? And the world just seems like increasingly out of control. And you know, you used to think, at least I used to think, that leaders get to be leaders because at least they're stable, reasonable individuals. But now you realize, nah, that's not really true. You know, a lot of leaders, not only around here, but in other places, are really wacky people. Right? Crazy people who really don't seem to care. Many of them, they don't really seem to care like what happens to anybody. So it seems. And so that makes you all the more recognize how important it is to pay attention right here to your heart, your soul, your relationships, your friendships, your communities, and to make your spirit strong, because we don't know what happens next. We have to be strong. Have to be supportive of one another. Some of you said, who haven't been part of the community for very long, said that they would like to get to know our community and have a sense of a shared path with others. And so that's why we always have, at the end of our seminars, conversations together. And that's the purpose of the teas, to get to know each other and share a conversation about Dharma. That's why we have practice partners. All of you have been assigned to a practice partner, and you'll get an email how to contact that person. That practice partner is a really important part of the practice period, because in Zen in particular, the teaching in Zen is that the Dharma is to express the Dharma. The Dharma is expression of Dharma. Without expression of Dharma, there's no Dharma. It's like a static thing. It can't be a static thing. So we have to express our Dharma, express our understanding. And that's what we do with our practice partners. We do it in many ways during the practice period, but especially we have a practice partner. And the idea is that I think we have information of, about how to conduct the conversations. It's pretty commonsensical and loose idea. But basically, to have a focused conversation, not a casual conversation. Some of you, I think we ask on the forum, who would you like to have as your practice partner? And some of you say who, and then we try to match you up. And some of you will be paired randomly. And it usually works out amazingly well because we have extraordinary people, right? So it usually works out amazingly well, but it's possible that it won't work out. Sometimes something comes up for your partner and they can't meet with you, they can't follow through, or whatever happens, maybe something else happens. And if it doesn't work out, let us know, because that is an important element of the practice period. And I hope every one of you will take the responsibility to be a really good practice partner for your partner who will need you. And what that means mostly is that you will listen to them. You won't give them good advice. They really don't need your advice. Because they could get advice on AI, That would be better advice than you could give. It stands to reason that AI can give better advice than you can. Because AI, you're just limited by your own life. AI is not limited that way. So don't give them any advice, but listen to them. Just listen to them with a good heart. Don't even comment on what they say. Just listen to them. And then speak to them about your practice and speak from the heart. One of the things that we really value in everyday Zen is honesty. In other words, not like, I'm doing it right. No, we don't care if you do it right. We care that you do it and that you express it. And these conversations are to be confidential. We don't talk to other people, our best friends, about what our practice partner said. And everybody can feel safe that way. Anyway, those are that's the basic idea of practice partners. It's really important part of the practice period. It's just a little bit, counter-cultural in Zen, where we were all taught to say nothing to anyone about anything. And that's a good policy, I think, in general, but in this case, no, we're gonna really talk to our practice partner. Oh, I'm so sorry, you're not hearing me? Oh no, should I start from the beginning again? Oh no, well, it's all recorded, you can hear it later. You should have told me a long time ago. That's too bad. On the other hand, I didn't say anything, so. So you have a practice partner, and before we had so many people, we used to have practice leaders. Everybody had, in addition to a practice partner, a practice leader, one of the senior people of Everyday Zen, one of our teachers, who could talk to you, but we have too many people now, and our teachers are too lazy and old to do that. But there's an email address to be found somewhere that if you want to talk to one of the practice leaders, you can certainly do that. You can ask to do that. So we don't assign anybody or guarantee that send an email to that address, and I think Tracy said she's going to try to get somebody to talk to you. It might even be her.
It is.
It is, yeah. No, but I mean, it might be you who talks to them.
Oh.
But you probably can't talk to everybody. But yeah. So the theme of our practice period, you can hear me good?
Yeah.
The theme of our practice period is becoming ourself. Wait, I already am myself. Not necessarily. Who are you really? That's the problem. You are the self you think you are, but we're not so convinced that's who you really are. So we're asking you to try to find out who you really are and really become yourself. And that doesn't mean like throw away your personality. It means, see what's behind it. See the real self, hidden, cleverly, within your ordinary, everyday self. So that's a challenge for all of us. And we're going to be studying two books over the course of the practice period, the one called Becoming Yourself, Suzuki Roshi's new book, edited by our dear teacher Sojin Weitzman and Jiryu Rushman Beiler, the abbot of Green Gulch. So we'll be mostly reading that one. It's very inspiring and easy to read. And also we'll be reading The Awakening of Faith in the Mahayana, a text from the 5th or 6th century, probably attributed to Ashvaghosa, although he almost certainly didn't write it. And that'll be interesting. It's a very philosophical text that is sort of in Asia, in Far East Asia, China, Japan, probably the most important text for the explanation of fundamental Mahayana Buddhist doctrine. So we'll read that too, the best we can. And the references to these things are online. So now I hand it over to our Shuso. And she's going to introduce herself for a moment, and then she'll read you some excerpts from the practice period enrollment forms. So you can hear the actual words of some of your partners in the practice period. Yeah, we'll move this to her, yeah.
I haven't sat here before, and Norman said you were awesome, and anyone who sat here knows you feel it, it's vibrating, it's amazing. It was a really an honor to read all these applications, and I get the feeling of just one body. You know, I have my own intentions around the practice period, but I read 148 other intentions, and wow, I'm thinking this way now, you know, every time I think in. So it's really fantastic. And I wish I could read all of them, but we would all fall asleep in the heat. Not because they're not interesting, but I know it's warm in here. So I did pick out a few that I think are just emblematic in a way of what we share or have shared. If you haven't been there with this intention, you probably will be. I was feeling that way reading all of these. So just for the next 10 minutes or so, I thought I'd share what we read. And these are in no particular order. My intention is to keep Zazen mind during the entire day. During this practice period, I would like to compassionately attend to my worry habit, particularly worry about my children and grandchildren and spouse. I hope to make friends with the great mystery on a deeper level. This will be my third spring living in Maine, and I would like to really attend to the subtle changing season over the course of this practice period. My intention is to follow the schedule and enjoy sitting with my wife and son. I'd also like to stay connected to the Sangha, the Shuso, and to Norman. I'd like to ask that, or I'd like also for Suzuki Roshi's teachings to support me as I go through an exciting and scary work transition. At times, I can feel my practice slipping into merely the concept of practice, with the busyness of starting a new business, grievous news cycles, and screen habituation. I'm interested in deepening the grooves that find more time for meaningful daily practice and letting go of anything I think I know for a while and seeing what unfolds instead. I've been spending much more time meditating since my husband died and feel it has really helped me greatly with this life transition. I believe doing it even more intensely during practice period will bring me more comfort and peace and hopefully insight. I started a writing project for myself personally, asking the question, how does one end suffering for oneself and for all beings? I am a deeply feeling person, so I have a lot of strong emotions. I would like to get better at being with all of these emotions, especially the afflictive ones, and not believing or identifying with them. My intention is to better develop a practice that helps me manage my fears around aging, sickness, and death, and to show up a bit more lighthearted with a sense of humor for others and myself. I want to study haiku this practice period, and I want to intensify welcoming myself into my life. I miss practice. I had lunch with Jean, and she said, come back. And so I want to drop back into my practice again. My intention is to let go of some of my perfectionism, be more accepting and less self-critical as I begin again to sew my rakusu. In terms of questions, I'm hoping that practice period will reveal the Dharma gate I most need to enter at this point in my life. My commitment to practice has been wavering lately. I want a structured schedule, more frequent zazen and study. In this season of my life, I need less turning out to the world and more turning in. Friends are dying now. I want to explore and practice being more authentic and intimate as I experience a more heightened sense of my own mortality. My intention in entering this practice period is to be single-minded and with great effort. A concern or question of mine has been, what keeps me from being silence? Why do I need to find something to fill the space? What is it that draws me away from the beauty of silence? Practice is my way of life. I need to intensify it periodically, and practice period and sesshin are part of that. Just by way of increased time on the cushion, regular contact with other seasoned practitioners, and focus on study. This reading of the new Suzuki Roshi book is important to me, to share it with others and to help it come alive. My main intention is to approach sitting with commitment, patience, and kindness, to treat myself as a beginner, as a learner, and to dismiss judgmental thoughts. A question that has come up to the forefront around this is the idea that the right thing is always happening in every moment. I have believed this for a while, but now I'm questioning this thought. I keep hearing about the 10,000 causes and conditions. I'm curious about it all. I'm getting old, and I want to spend my remaining time practicing. As a lay and trusted teacher, I find to feel authentic in my practice and the practice I share with those I guide, I find myself being drawn to a practice firmly rooted in the foundations of Zen as my North Star. My intention is to dissolve more deeply. My intention is to settle myself and my body and to return to the Everyday Zen community. I have been on a 3-year transition, which included relocation and a health odyssey with cancer and other surgeries. I'm now feeling settled and I want to re-engage wholeheartedly. This year, instead of rising to the occasion time and again, I'd like to meet the world with an attitude of unfolding. What's calling me is an aspiration to find myself in the Mahayana. My intention is to sit zazen 40 minutes each day, study a precept each week, and journal daily. Practice noticing tenderness in all things. I would like to intensify my practice with Sangha and see how my gifts might be used in the service of others. I am grieving the loss of my daughter and undergoing a profound transformation. Practice supports this process like nothing else. The Dharma and support from the Sangha are my ground. I have never done a practice period, and after many years on the path, I look forward to a more concentrated period of study. I intend to strengthen my path by engaging helpful habits and recognizing unhealthy habits. My focus this practice period is to listen more, interrupt less, guide without force, pause 3 times a day, and breathe, smell, and listen. My intention is to deepen concentration amidst passing days and to cultivate joy and gratitude. I intend to continue my present twice a day sitting practice with a clearer focus on the ways I confuse and worry myself. Despite all the crud I regularly recycle through my head, there really is only one world and no abiding self. I'd like to sit both morning periods of Zazen during the practice period, as well as the Sesshin. My own ongoing concern is to find the meaning of our practice in my everyday life. My intention is to bring my full attention as much as possible during this time. I expect that practice period may involve sitting with some fear. I have concerns about the well-being of dear ones right now. I'm not skillful with fear, so we will see. And of course, I do not really know. Mainly, I hope to practice gratitude for the teachings, for this Sangha, for strong coffee in the morning, for the approach of spring, and for the good people who persist in these times. My intention is to focus on the Lojong slogans, number 15 and 16, which include a daily practice of Tonglen, on and off the cushion. My burning inquiry during this practice period is to see through my sense of I. My hope is to intensify this everyday practice of growing my heart and creating space. I want to deepen my precept practice and let it generate a real positive impact on the world around me. I want to feel more connected to everyone and everything and less separate and self-centered. This practice period, I hope to discern and explore the sources of my impatience with others, with myself, and with the world. My intention is to explore how I can be a fully conscious father as my daughter blossoms and becomes a more independent 3-year-old. I am currently transitioning from a comfortable middle-class lifestyle to a more economically precarious situation. And I'm hoping, with the support of practice period, schedule, and Sangha activities, to negotiate some new challenges this spring. I'm in my late 70s. My time remaining is measured now in years, perhaps less. And yet I catch myself squandering it as though I have all the time in the world. I want the truth of impermanence to stop living only in my head and to drop fully into my body, my awareness, and my choices. I want to live as though this moment matters, because it does. I intend to practice listening. I intend to accept and adapt to the somewhat scary changes happening in my mind, short-term memory loss, word loss, and confusion about calendar time, geography, and sequencing. Now, don't tell anyone. I'm just kidding. I feel the question or call for me right now is less about intensity and more about really surrendering completely to this practice, allowing it to infuse every single part of my life and my life infusing this practice. I am considering not so much doing the practice period so much as offering myself to it, like a stick of incense or a flower. Last week, I offered the Buddha a potato. Anyway, maybe becoming yourself will help me. Even though I have been meditating with Everyday Zen for about 3.5 years, I somehow still feel like an outsider. My aim is to quiet, calm, restore, integrate, write, create, and connect more deeply to the Everyday Zen community. My first intention is to be present with Sangha and deepen my relationship with other practitioners. My past year has been full of challenges and changes, and I would like to explore becoming myself as an experienced practitioner living alone. I'd also like to explore how to be a bodhisattva in these times, besides showing up at political events. I seem to ebb and flow with my practice. I fall back into being lazy and can't quite get back to the daily meditation routine. But then practice period comes along, exclamation point. Now I have a goal. Truthfully, the last few months I've been in training for practice period. I am getting up earlier and earlier because soon it will be practice period. I don't know quite what else to say, except I'm so excited it's time for practice period. Thank you for listening.
So we want to hear from all of you, but we won't do that today. It's a long day. But at the opening seminar next Wednesday, we hope to leave enough time for everybody to speak in groups and in the whole group about how you're here in practice period. So for now, let's chant the four vows to end the Dharma talk. And then we'll set up for ceremony. We're going to end with Ryaku Phusat ceremony. And if any of you are tired and need to go home, go ahead. The rest of us will do Ryaku Phusat ceremony, and we'll end our day. Thanks so much, Tracy, for all of that. Those were great, especially that Bafo ending. That was the best. So, yes, thank you for being here. And let's chant and end the talk.